everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour, and a completely different theme today. It's about a man that you may not have heard of, or may have heard the name, but didn't know much about him. He is Nikola Tesla, T-E-S-L-A, and he was the forgotten brilliance of the Siberian-American scientist and inventor. But he was very much a spiritual person, very much a humanist. And to explore this, in my belief, an absolutely top-ranked genius, we've invited Richard Munson from Illinois, who is the author of a wonderful book called Tesla, Inventor of the Modern. It's an in-depth, authoritative biography about the life and genius of the inventor and scientist, Nikola Tesla. Professionally, Dick has worked on clean energy. He's appeared on this program in the past, and very, very keen on environmental issues for different nonprofits. And he's also been important on Capitol Hill. He's a former director of the Environmental Health Fund and was a senior vice president of Recycled Energy Development, a company committed to cutting greenhouse gas emissions by capturing waste energy. Very noble cause. He has coordinated congressional and Senate coalitions and bipartisan caucuses on legislative issues addressing brownfields, redevelopment, energy, environmental, water quality, and manufacturing issues. So we really need Dick's input as one of the people guiding us through this environmental catastrophe we're facing today, because a lot of talk, very little action, a lot of pontificating, a lot of virtue shaming, but very little actual change. Compared to what's coming at us, we should be paying much more attention. Dick is one of those voices who will help us. He also, one of his other books is From Edison to Enron, as well as Cardinals of Capitol Hill, an insider's look at the lawmakers who control government spending. His current book, Tech to Table, 25 Innovators Reimagining Food, will be released in September. His website is richardmunson.com. That's M-U-N-S-O-N, Richard Munson. Richard, nice to have you with us today.
Thanks very much for inviting me to your show.
I've always been a fan of Tesla. People may not be aware of it, but I'll just throw a few of the random ideas out. He was a person of unique insight, and many of his most brilliant scientific innovations occurred when he was just out walking, like Einstein would work in his garden, suddenly come up with wonderful ideas. Tesla had a friend named Julian Hawthorne who wrote, "Seldom did one meet a scientist or engineer who was also a poet, a philosopher, an appreciator of fine music, a linguist, and a connoisseur of food and drink." He was unique. He was a friend of Mark Twain. That would have been a hoot. Could you imagine being in a room with Mark Twain and Tesla? Whoa, what I wouldn't have given for being a fly on the wall. They spent a lot of time together, walking, talking, and also in his laboratory. In fact, Sarah Bernhardt, who was the grand dame of American theater, especially when touring throughout the United States, back in 1986, she was at a party, and she was introduced to Tesla. And at that same party, he met an Indian Hindu monk, Swami Vivekananda, who later wrote that Tesla said he could demonstrate mathematically the relationship between matter and energy. Now, that's something that the Swami hoped would give a scientific foundation to the Vedic cosmology. He was also into physical fitness in a big way. He was doing power walking anywhere from 8 to 10 miles a day, that's 13 to 16 kilometers, and every day of the week. He believed that by doing this exercise, it stimulated his brain cells. He would also was a lover of birds. He would sit in the park and bring bags of food for the pigeons. And he had one favorite pigeon that would come every day. He would call it, it would come and sit on his shoulder and just sit there. And when that happened, well, imagine what it would be like petting your favorite dog that just looks up at you with such love and devotion. And when you're petting that dog or cat, or holding hands with a loved one, or hugging, you're creating a hormone, a feel-good hormone, oxytocin. And that allows us to live a longer life and have less cortisol. So he was very much ahead of the curve in those years because he was out there loving the birds. They were loving him back. He was also, later in life, he became a vegetarian, drank a lot of vegetable juices when it wasn't common to have vegetable juices, when people didn't even know what a vegetable juice was. He believed in having raw honey every day in his diet. He believed in having the thick and the original type of breads that were made around the world, including the Essene breads, E-S-S-E-N-E, which were really sprouted breads. And he had raw milk. So in many respects, now mind you, this is 50 years before these became popular. He was a person who was not orthodox in his religious beliefs, and he also believed that Buddhism and Christianity both had relevance. So what did he do? Why do we have Richard on the show? Because I'm going to give the rest of this time to Richard. So as soon as I give my own thoughts, Richard, you're going to roll with it, much like a classroom on the air. In 1887, Tesla developed an induction motor that ran on alternating current, AC, a power system format that was rapidly expanding in Europe and the United States because of its advantages in long-distance, high-voltage transmission. Now, you might have heard of Westinghouse. Well, he was a powerful person. He hired Tesla to be a consultant at the Westinghouse Electric and Manufacturing Company's Pittsburgh labs. There he created an alternating current system to power the city's streetlights. In 1888, extreme competition between three big electric companies, Westinghouse, Edison, and Thomson Houston, trying to grow in a capital-intensive business while financially undercutting each other, there was a war of the currents. It was a propaganda campaign going on with Edison Electric trying to claim their direct current system was better and safer than the Westinghouse alternating current system. It wasn't true, but Edison was nothing if not a brilliant master of projecting images to get people to believe in him. The money Tesla made from licensing his AC patents made him independently wealthy and gave him the time and funds to pursue his own interest. And Tesla coil to produce high voltage, low current, high frequency alternating current electricity. He would use this resonant transformer circuit in his later wireless power work. Westinghouse Electric asked Tesla to participate in the 1983 World's Exposition in Chicago, where the company had a large space in the electricity building devoted to electrical exhibits. Westinghouse Electric won the bid to light the exposition with alternating current, and it was a key event in the history of AC power, as the company demonstrated to the American public the safety, reliability, and efficacy of an alternating current system that was polyphase and could supply the other AC and DC exhibits at the fair. In the early morning hours of March 13, 1985, his South Fifth Avenue building lab caught fire. It started in the basement of the building. It was so intense, Tesla's fourth floor lab burned and collapsed into the second floor. The fire set back Tesla's ongoing projects and destroyed a collection of early notes and research material, models, and demonstration pieces. But starting in 1984, Tesla began investigating what he referred to as the radiant energy of invisible kinds X-rays after he had noticed damaged film in his laboratory in previous experiments. Tesla may have inadvertently captured an X-ray image predating by a few weeks the Wilhelm Roentgen's December 1985 announcement of the discovery of X-ray rays. So from the 1890s through the 1906, Tesla spent a great deal of his time and fortune on a series of projects trying to develop a transmission of electrical power without wires. It was an expansion of his idea of using coils to transmit power that he had been demonstrating in wireless. Anyhow, that's just a brief history. Mind you, in 1932, Tesla claimed he had invented a motor that could run on cosmic rays. 1933, he told reporters he was on the verge of producing proof of a new form of energy. He claimed it was a theory of energy that was violently opposed to Einstein's physics and could be tapped with an apparatus that would be cheap to run and last 500 years. So that's just a few of the things, and I mean a few of the things. Richard, I'm going to turn it over to you so that you can now take us through all the uniqueness of this man. The forum is yours.
Well, he is, in fact, a unique man. As your stories point out, he was a man ahead of his times. He, unfortunately, is not as well known as I think he deserves. And I also believe that many of his observations and the way he lived his life are relevant to the challenges we face today. So I began realizing that he was obtaining a bit more recognition. In part, I think everybody thinks of the name Tesla. They think of Elon Musk's car and company. I was particularly drawn to him because I was reading an article that had a quote by Larry Page, who is Google's co-founder, who referred to Tesla as his hero. So it sort of caused me to investigate more. And I must say, initially, I found that people who knew a bit about Tesla threw him into one of two camps. The first was that he was just this remarkable inventor, almost a superman, somebody who could do almost nothing wrong. And then there was also this camp who found him to be quirky, for lack of a better word. He had these odd habits. He despised jewelry. He'd get a fever if he looked at a peach. He'd count his steps so that if he walked in a sequence that was not divisible by three, he'd start his whole journey all over again. I guess I was, though, attracted to the notion that Tesla was far more complicated and interesting than either of those two paradigms. And so I found him to be both a remarkable scientist and a fascinating individual. On the science side, as you note, he dabbled in a variety of fields. He had over 300 patents. He is credited with inventing, as you note, the electric motor, long-distance power transmission, radio, robots, remote control. These are all the very foundations of our modern economy. In fact, the American Institute of Electrical Engineers said that if we did not have Tesla's inventions, the wheels of industry would cease to turn and our towns would be dark. So I think in addition to these, you know, real accomplishments, he also continued to have visions that inspired great minds for generations. He, for instance, foresaw cell phones, radar, laser weapons, artificial intelligence, vertical lift airplanes. Think about radar. It was about 100 years ago from this year, Tesla drew detailed plans as to how to make a system that would send out signals and then receive their reflections on a fluorescent screen. And according to the French scientist who about 20 years ago is credited with inventing radar, the French scientist, said that he was able to do it only because he used the precise apparatus and approach that Tesla had encouraged. And the scientist, his name is Girardot, Emile Girardot, had this great line. He said Tesla may have been dreaming because he didn't have the equipment to be able to, you know, send out these signals and receive their reflections. But he added that he must, if he was dreaming, at least he was dreaming correctly. And he continually dreamt correctly. He was a bit of, you have to remember, in the early 20th century, electricity was this marvel. The first time it was invented, we didn't even allow President Harrison to flick a switch in the White House because there was fear that he might get electrocuted. But Tesla, in his public presentations, displayed sort of the power of a magician. He would create lightning and sparks that would go 20 feet across the stage. This is something. Lightning was something that had been reserved before for nature alone. He made lamps glow, even though they were not attached to wires. Now, what makes him interesting, I think, is that he also had, in addition to all these unbelievable accomplishments that he doesn't get as much credit for as I think he should, but I think what makes him more interesting is that he also had a few quixotic notions. He thought that he could communicate with intelligent beings on other planets. He spent a lot of time trying to read other people's minds by coming up with monitors that he thought that he could attach to their retinas. And like all of us, you know, particularly inventors who are on the cutting edge, Tesla made some mistakes. After the Wright brothers, for instance, had their first airplane flight, Tesla, you know, swore that airplanes were too heavy to soar and that he much preferred the dirigibles that were being developed by Count Zeppelin. After Albert Einstein advanced his various theories of relativity, Tesla was saying that cosmic rays could travel faster than light and that splitting an atom would not produce any energy. But I guess I come to the conclusion it's a sort of a bad analogy, but his batting average, Tesla's batting average, as far as his ability to have more successes than, you know, failures, is just remarkable. I mean, he brought to us the very foundations of our modern economy, as well as inspired others to develop an array of devices that continue to dominate our daily lives. So in addition to all of that, I mean, he also has just a fascinating personal story about him. And I don't know if you want to interject with a question, but I can give you,
he was going.
In fact a Serb. He is a Serb who was born in Croatia, or what is now Croatia. His family lived in a rather modest home. His father was an Orthodox priest. His mother was, although she could not read or write, she was quite an inventor, came up with her own mechanical egg beater. The father oversaw an isolated church, and Tesla claimed that his early years were blissful. He was doted over by two older sisters. He rode horses. He played with the farm animals. He said he had, you know, the greatest cat in the world. But tragedy struck when he was 7 years old. He had an older brother named Dane, who was the family favorite, was considered to be gifted to an extraordinary degree, and felt that he would, Dane would follow in his father's footsteps and go into the clergy. Well, when Dane was 12 and Nikola was 7 years old, the family's Arabian stallion bolted one late afternoon and threw Dane to the ground, and he died that night from his injuries. Tesla, he was 7 years old, witnessed this terrible scene, his favorite brother getting thrown and, you know, collapsing on the ground. And then in the middle of the night, his mother wakes him up and says, "Come into the other bedroom and kiss your dead brother goodbye." Tesla just, you know, cried, and even 55 years later would claim that this visual impression of his brother's death had lost none of its force. You would have thought that his parents would now turn their attentions to their remaining son, but they, particularly the father, increasingly idolized the dead boy's talents and consistently projected what his accomplishments to be. And Nikola could not live up to that ideal. So Nikola was bright, I mean, unbelievably bright. He spoke eight different languages. He was able to recite lengthy poems and stories from memory. But he would say that anything that he did only caused his parents to feel their loss more keenly, loss of their son, Dane. And so he claims, Tesla, Nikola, that he grew up with little confidence in himself. His father demanded that he be a priest. Tesla had no interest in being a priest. He wanted to be an engineer, an inventor. And it was, oddly enough, only when Nikola was virtually almost dying from cholera on his deathbed, he cleverly pleaded with his father that he thought that he could recover, cough, cough, if in fact he were allowed to go to university and study engineering. Well, obviously he recovered. He did get sent to school. He had, in his first 2 years, stellar performance. His parents received notes about from professors about how great he was. And yet Tesla, thinking that he was still looking for approval from his father, never got it. His father would continue to say that Dane would have done better. So here is this, you know, brilliant young student desperately seeking his father's attention, you know, after witnessing the death of his brother, and not getting it. So he dropped out of school. He took up gambling and billiards, moved secretly to a different town, got arrested for vagrancy, and was brought back to his parents' home by the police. And you can imagine the huge disappointment for his parents. And unfortunately, his father, you know, despondent, you know, died not much later. Tesla went on to, you know, back to engineering school and began to focus. He got his first job installing Edison phone systems in Budapest and Paris. He spent most of his time, however, trying to figure out the wonders of electricity. You had noted earlier his ability to make inventions while he was, you know, quoting poems or plays. He was, in fact, in a Budapest park while he was walking by himself and quoting the entire, you know, two-part play of Faust by Goethe. And then he came, in the midst of that, he came up with a vision of how to create an electrical motor that ran on alternating current. And he grabbed a stick and began to draw it in the sand in the park in Budapest. But it's that relationship of focusing on humanities and science that I think is quite unique and also quite relevant to us today. If I can circle back to the Edison, only because it's intriguing, these two great inventors actually overlapped on several occasions. So Nikola was installing these phone systems and was found by Edison's, you know, European supervisors to be just this brilliant and hardworking, you know, engineer. And so they decided that they should send him to New York City and to work with the great man himself. And they sent along this absolutely marvelous letter of recommendation to Thomas Edison. They said, I know of two great men. They're referring to Thomas Edison. And you are one of them, Mr. Edison. And the other is this young man standing in front of you. You should hire him. So he got a job. But the two of them just did not hit it off. They had such totally different styles to begin with. Edison, you know, appeared rather rumpled and crass. He was often chewing tobacco. He had this Midwestern drawl that with tobacco in his mouth, it was hard to hear him. Tesla, on the other hand, was this almost European sophisticate. As I said, spoke eight different languages, dressed as though he was headed to the opera. The two men also had totally different inventing styles. Edison was a trial and error inventor. He put hundreds, if not thousands, of pieces of equipment on his workshop table and experimented with each one of them until he got something to work. In contrast, Tesla had what he referred to as cerebral engineering. He did everything in his mind, and he was able to do that substitution and come up with alternative designs. And only when he was convinced that it would work would he put it on paper. But he did everything in his mind. And the two, as you had noted too, on this war of the currents, the two were on totally different sides. I mean, Edison favored what was called direct current, which was a low voltage and therefore, from Edison's perspective, would not be harmful, but it had the disadvantage that it couldn't travel very far. Tesla, in comparison, favored alternating current, which could be increased in its voltage and travel long distance, making electricity available to more people. Tesla worked for Edison for a little less than a year. Edison recognized that he was a marvelous worker. Tesla felt that he had gotten an agreement from Edison that if, in fact, he, Tesla, increased the efficiency of Edison generators, that Tesla would get this bonus. And so Tesla worked even harder. I mean, worked, you know, throughout the night, worked on the weekends, and after about 2 or 3 months, he went back to the Wizard of Menlo Park and said, I've doubled the efficiency of your generators. Can I have my bonus that you promised me? And Edison, in probably the most horrible response that you can give to a young immigrant, laughed at him and essentially said, when you become a full-fledged American, you'll appreciate an American joke. Tesla, of course, found nothing funny about this. He had done what had been part of the bargain and got nothing for it. So he picked up his bowler hat and started off on creating his own company. And as you said, that after that company, he got his business partner swindled him. Another example, which we can come back to as far as how bad of a businessman. He might have been a great inventor, but Tesla was a really bad businessman. He lost his share in that company and then spent 2 years actually digging ditches for $2 a day. And it was only because the supervisor of the ditch digging, they were digging ditches to run new telegraph lines, and Tesla, as he was digging, kept coming up with suggestions to how to make the telegraph more efficient. They decided that this guy might have some smarts, and so he, as you note, sold his patents on the electric motor to George Westinghouse and made a bundle of money and allowed him to change his lifestyle, move into the Waldorf Astoria hotel, the classy hotel at the time, and spend his evenings eating at Delmonico's. His favorite were, at least at that stage, before he went, as you noted, into vegetable juices. He enjoyed his steaks. The one other, as we're on George Westinghouse, to note how bad of a businessman Tesla was. After he and Westinghouse accomplished the transmission of electricity from the hydropower plants at the Niagara Falls, 400 miles down to New York City, just a marvelous engineering triumph, George Westinghouse was a little bit short of money because he had spent so much on this project, and J.P. Morgan, the vulture, you know, Wall Street tycoon of the time, felt that he had a possibility of taking over Westinghouse's company. And so Westinghouse was, you know, turned to Tesla, who had this, you know, royalty payment due to him for each horsepower of coming out of the electrical motors. And Westinghouse turns to Tesla and says, is there any way that you can help me, you know, save my company? And again, Tesla had everything going for him. He had the patents. He had the agreements, everything. But he turns to Westinghouse and says, you have been the only one that's been kind to me that realizes the power of my vision of bringing electricity to the world. Would it be helpful to you if I tear up my contract? And this contract would have, in today's dollars, probably have been worth $1 billion. And so at that moment, out of idealism, out of appreciation for the kindness that George Westinghouse showed him, out of abhorrence for what J.P. Morgan was going to try and do, Tesla tore up his paper and then spent the rest of his life dealing with financial problems.
Hmm. That's a really good opening discussion. Now let's take it further. Let's begin to examine all the things we benefit from today. Cell phones, for example, and the communication systems that we're all embedded with, and show how Tesla was instrumental in the development of all these long before anyone else had the ideas. If you would please go through the different inventions that improve our lives today, where Tesla was essential to that progenitor.
Well, the first and foremost is electricity. I mean, the ability to be able to have the various electric appliances that we have. Think about your day. You wake up to an electric alarm clock. You probably, you know, get your toast from an electric toaster. You might take an electric subway to work if people are now going to work, an electric elevator up to your office. You have your electric computer. I mean, your life is revolves around this device that has changed our lives. The other thing that's probably most prominent is radio. Marconi is the one who receives the most public credit, and there's no doubt that Marconi was able to piece together the various components of a radio system, but it was the core Tesla components, such as the coil that you mentioned, that allowed, you know, a long distance, you know, transmissions of information that today allow us, you know, without giving much of a thought, our ability to have conversations with people on the other side of the world, to be able to hear radio shows like yours, to television shows. On the cell phone, I mean, Tesla, a good 100 years ago was talking about how you could have something that would be the size of a piece of equipment that you could put in your shirt pocket that would allow you to talk to people on the other side of the world and receive news of the day from, you know, capitals of all these international, countries. So his real accomplishments as far as, you know, electricity and radio have clearly changed the way that we live. But he also had visions that he couldn't make real just because the technology was not yet there to be able to allow us to, you know, send these, in the case of, making cell phones as, you know, compact as they are. He envisioned what our future might be. So I think he is the underappreciated, genius who brought us into the modern era.
Could you discuss what his life was like at the end, let's say the last 10 years, and the kind of friendships he had, and why in the world were none of the people seeking him out to help him, and in return, clear up to the end, he was still inventing, he was still creating?
Well, the trials of doing a biography is that you spend a lot of time in isolation and in sometimes boring libraries. So I was at the Library of Congress looking at the collection that they had of Tesla's diagrams and schematics for various inventions. And I must say that I am not an engineer, so my eyes were sort of glazing over, and I went to the librarian and plaintively asked if there was anything else that he had that I could review. And he said, there's a couple of boxes in the back. Let me bring those out and see what's inside. And inside were all of these letters that Tesla had sent over the years to a variety of friends and some business colleagues. But suddenly, this bonanza, if you will, particularly for a biographer, allowed me to hear his voice and see a whole nother side to him outside of his laboratory, where, in fact, he was a human being, and charmingly so. His two best friends were the Johnsons. Robert, who was the editor of the Century magazine, which at the time was the nation's largest periodical, and his wife, Catherine, they operated a intellectual salon in a stately townhouse in Manhattan's Murray Hill neighborhood. They weren't overwhelmingly wealthy, but they lived that way, and they gathered around them for dinners, mostly luminary writers and artists and sculptors, and Tesla was one of their favorites that they brought over. As you mentioned, another favorite was Mark Twain. He was a frequent guest. And then afterwards, the two of them would go back to Tesla's laboratory, and they were like two teenagers with a bunch of great toys. They were doing x-rays of each other's hands and feet. They were shooting artificial lightning or electrical sparks across the room. They were dancing about with globes that were glowing without being attached to wires. the relations were, you got to see sort of this jovial and relaxed side to this usually intense inventor. Other people he got close to was the naturalist John Muir, the sculptor August St. Gardner-Daines. And they were just, intellectuals who were discussing the issues of the day. The one part of his life was, did he, people often ask, did he marry or did he have relationships or a close relationship with any women? He did actually when he was about 20 years old, about 23 actually, where he met a woman named Anna. They were together one summer in Austria, and they spent joyous hours sort of walking through parks, he reciting various poems or plays, and she thinking about the family that they would have together. And Tesla, the relationship did not last because Tesla went back to engineering school, and she went off and got married and did have the children that she was looking for. But throughout his life, Tesla enjoyed flirting, to be quite honest. Whenever he would go to the Johnsons, he'd ask if some of his favorite female friends, like a Miss Merrington, I think was one of his favorites, asked if she would be attending that evening. And if she was, he'd definitely make it over in time for dinner. But he argued, later in his life that inventors could not marry. In this sort of arrogant, odd way, he said he accepted that artists or musicians or writers could do that. But he said an inventor has so intense a nature, and so much of it a wild, passionate quality, that if you were to give it to a woman you might love, you'd give up everything and so take everything from his chosen field. So you have this, totally focused, but very friendly, individual who I think towards the end of his life, I read one letter suggesting that his decision against marriage, he called a pity because sometimes we feel so lonely. But it does, Richard, the package of letters was just a joy to see and recognize a side of him that most people didn't have a chance to see.
Also, he prided himself on his celibacy. He felt that his celibacy allowed him to have even more energy in his consciousness to create. And by the way, he's not alone. A lot of people that I know who are long-distance runners say that they're willing to sacrifice a lot of sex to have the energy for those long runs. True or not, that's never been discovered. But he went years, if not decades, with no sex, and he talked about that. Tell us now what we should know about the very end of his life, how old he was, where he died, what he died from, who was there, and what happened to all of his possessions.
Well, the late years of his life, in large part because of the decision to tear up his contract with George Westinghouse, were financially challenging, and he moved from hotel room to hotel room, in part because these pigeons that you had referred to, he not only attracted this one that he had this special relationship that sat on his shoulder and, they created this deep bond, but he attracted a lot of pigeons, and several hotel managers were not exactly happy that they were hanging around their building. So he had to move a couple of times. In the later years of his life, he would, on each birthday, hold a press conference at which probably 40 of the best journalists would arrive at his apartment or laboratory and hear about a 3 or 4 hour discussion from Tesla about his ideas about the future, be that cell phones or death rays or, the benefits of squeezing your toes 100 times before going to bed as a a way to focus your attention. One interesting thing is that when he died at the Hotel New Yorker alone and poor. And to be honest, one of the only reasons that he survived is that a couple of engineers who had worked at the Westinghouse Corporation found out that he, this great inventor, this person that brought us all these marvelous inventions, was living in poverty in the Hotel New Yorker, that they convinced the Westinghouse company to give him a small stipend so that he could continue to live there. Recognize that he went from the heights of affluence with a room at the Waldorf Astoria and the dinners at Delmonico's to this, impoverished, existence at the Hotel New Yorker. So he had these, annual sessions where he was discussing various ideas that he had. When he died at the age of 84 in 1942, he had spoken on numerous occasions about this vision for a death ray. And you can imagine that the U.S. government was not excited to think that his schematics for this death ray might be obtained by our World War II adversaries. So they confiscated all of Tesla's papers and trunks and reports, and also went to every hotel that he had ever stayed at and gathered them all together, and then also proceeded to find an expert who could come in and spend time reviewing his papers with FBI agents as well as agents from Naval Intelligence to see if there was anything in these papers that might be of benefit to our World War II enemies. And so this is actually kind of just an odd coincidence of history. They hired the director of MIT's High Voltage Research Laboratory to come down and spend a week going through these papers. And he, this professor, who was very distinguished, he was elected to the National Academy of Engineering, won awards in science. He said that one of those papers that Tesla had written on actually death rays that should be categorized as top secrets, but the rest of them were largely the results of or the writings of an old man and of no particular importance to national security. Well, the intriguing and sort of just odd part of this is that this person who, this professor from MIT, happened to be not only a member of the National Academy of Engineering, but he was the uncle of the 45th President of the United States. And if you might remember, Donald Trump, when he was campaigning for his first election, said of this relative, "I had an uncle who went to MIT who was a top professor, Dr. John Trump. A genius. It's in my blood. I'm smart. Great marks, like really smart." So history sometimes just gives you such odd connections. But in this case, there was even one to a president of the United States.
That's interesting. So let's wrap it up now, if you would please, by taking us on a litany of step by step why those listening right now to this program should remember him, look into his work. There are many books written on him. I believe there are a couple movies made about him, and put him in the pantheon of where he belongs. I wouldn't put him beside Edison. I would put him ahead of Edison. And there's one reason on this. I worked for about 6 years on a project called Black Geniuses, and I looked at all the different inventions, including those of Louis Latimer, and I found that a lot of the things that Edison took credit for, he didn't actually invent. Latimer invented the incandescent light, but he hired these people to work for him. So he had lots of scientists who were brilliant, and I don't know what he paid them. I'm assuming a good living wage at the time to get their loyalty and get their patents, But anyone who came to him, his company owned the patents, and therefore he took all full frontal credit for them. Tesla didn't do that. You know, he was a unique individual. Edison was brilliant. There's no question about that. I do not, you know, I'm not casting any dispersions on Edison. He was smart. But in my opinion, Tesla was more original, came up with better ideas, but just unfortunately made that really, really disastrous decision to tear up his contract. Because I believe that had he continued to be supported, he would have done a lot more research, because he had laboratories, he'd have scientists, he'd have commercial interest in his products. So we would have seen a lot more productivity, because there was a period in his life, almost 25 years, where he didn't have much money. So he wasn't on his game. And that is the difference, because Edison was working and inventing, and his laboratory was creating right up to his death. Your final thoughts on this, please. Take your time. No rushing.
I think what intrigues me about Tesla is his relevance to issues that confront us today. We're living in a time where there is this great skepticism towards science. And here we have this individual who brought us so many things that we now consider basic necessities of life. And he brought them to us because he was adamant about facts. He was committed to experimentation. He was devoted to observation. And I think that model of realizing the benefits of what science can provide is a benefit to us all today. I also recognize that Tesla was an immigrant. We're living in a time where immigrants are not, or at least some, are not appreciated in the way that Tesla demonstrates that they brought to this country such great vitality and so many benefits and advances that we could not live without them. The other thing, as I think about Tesla as to how he would look at science today in the United States as well as in other countries, I was struck by, I was giving a talk actually at MIT, and one of the professors noted that he was working on a project with 160 other scientists around the globe. And in one regard, you sort of are overwhelmed by just the organizational problems associated with that, let alone, you know, the mind power that's being focused on it. Tesla, I think, would be shocked by such a thing, in part because he recognized the power of the individual inventor. And I think we're losing that in our current focus on science. And I'm not dismissing, you know, the unbelievable advances that have come from scientific teams, but I think we have not developed a school system or a university or a corporate research system that gives enough encouragement to and credit to individual inventors. And then also I was struck by and saddened as I read an article of a couple of months ago where colleges were cutting back on their majors in the humanities, in part because they were just facing financial problems, but I think in part because they were thinking they needed to be, in their minds, more practical. They needed to focus on disciplines that would lead to careers in engineering or science or what have you. Tesla, in my mind, would view that as a real mistake, because he viewed science or invention as requiring different perspectives on a problem. And the humanities, as demonstrated by his, you know, reciting Goethe's Faust as he developed or drew out the design for an electric motor, the humanities, in his mind, provided a way to see the world differently. And that need to see the world from different perspectives is an important lesson today, I think, and I believe Tesla would agree, as colleges rethink their academic offerings, he would argue that you need, if you're going to have inventions, if you're going to have scientific and technological progress, you need a combination of both the humanities and science. And then finally, I guess in this era, you know, where we are so focused on money and, you know, corporate power, I look at Tesla as a curiosity-driven inventor who was motivated by idealism. You had mentioned Edison. Edison was sort of the opposite of that. He developed new products because he was an entrepreneur. He wanted to make money. And I'm not criticizing that. That's sort of the way our system works. But Tesla, although certainly he enjoyed money when he had it, which wasn't, as you note, as long as he should have. He liked his lavish meals at Delmonico's. But he believed that technology transcended the marketplace and that invention should not be tied just to profits. He had this great line, said, "The desire that guides me in all that I do is to harness the forces of nature to the service of mankind." And so here you have this man who aimed high, I think higher than any other inventor, because he had this idealism. What could he do to reduce drudgery that we face by humans around the world? How could he, through his inventions, bring electrical power and communications to everyone freely around the world? I mean, his system, at one point, he thought that he could send electrical, you know, lightning bolts into the earth and would resonate, and you or any consumer could basically plug into the earth and gain free electrical power. This was his idealism, his way of bringing power and drudgery reducing advances to the world. So I think he worked tirelessly to bring this power freely and to build robots that reduce life's drudgery. He had never accepted the status quo, and so I think he was driven by inner forces that just made creation the most important thing in his life. And I would argue that we are the better for it.
I would fully agree. I'll just had a few of my own end notes here. When I was a very young person and just arrived in New York, I had a friend named Richard who was a pianist. And one evening he said, "I'd like for you to come to a little recital I'm doing to see a man that, in my opinion, is one of the most remarkable human beings in this country." So I said, "Fine." And I went down to the Van Dyke Studios on 8th Avenue in the 50s, and we went up, and the place was mobbed. All these older people, almost all women, in their 80s, 90s, and we went inside. It was not a large studio, but it was a classic artist studio, and we went back behind a curtain, well, not even a door, and there where he did most of his work under the skylight was a man named Paul Swan. You can look up Paul Swan's life. And he was in his 80s, and he was putting on the makeup. And then, about a half hour later, Richard started playing the piano. And he came out, and he just transformed himself. His energy, his movement, his grace. He was doing Narcissus, as a mime, and the people were just spellbound. He performed for over an hour, and the people were just overwhelmingly enthused by this. And after everybody left, and I asked a couple of the people in the hallway, I've been following him since the 1920s. He was an actor, a writer, a poet, a sculptor, a philosopher. He did it all. And Richard said, "You do realize that this is one of the last remaining Renaissance Americans. He's mastered all these fields." And so for the next 5 years, I had a chance to talk with him. I put him on a diet, got him back his health, which was not good. And he talked about the other people who were remarkable in his life. And he mentioned Tesla's name. And he was so pure in his concepts of living that he would not do certain movies under Cecil B. DeMille's because they were too vulgar. They were not. They did not enhance the spirit. I think we should stop and just for a moment look around the world we have today and ask how many of these people, unique in their own fields, are older, probably no longer considered relevant, like Tesla was, and therefore there's no celebration of their life and how we benefit from them. We just had the passing of the uniquely iconic Bob Fast, the radio personality. He's been on radio for, I believe, over 50 years. He just passed on Saturday. And yet, what do you want to bet that even a large percentage of the audience at WBAI, where I've been for 45 years, don't even know who he is? Might have listened to him a long time ago. But he was unique. We should be celebrating the uniqueness of the people who are still alive, not waiting to do something about them decades after their death, and especially young people to appreciate this, because I don't believe we're going to have the time for people to achieve what historically they did. Everything is in fast motion, and mastery of life, mastery of projects can't be done at warp speed. Thank you very much for your outstanding work on this. Richard Munson and the book, Tesla, Inventor of the Modern. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.